him now, leaning over him beside the bearded man to study their captive. "This is Barton Bearkiller," the farmer said, although Barton Blowhard might be a more appropriate name. "Barton Bearkiller the Blowhard. Meet my apprentice, Maddie Regal."
"You're a girl," Barton said, even more confused than before.
The girl looked at her older companion and said mockingly, "He's quick on the uptake, isn't he?" The bearded man nodded in agreement.
"Not much gets past him."
Barton frowned, trying to make sense of it all. The day had started so well, he thought, and now it had all fallen to pieces, and he didn't really understand why or how it had happened.
"Who are you?" he said finally.
The farmer inclined his head in greeting. "I'm Will Treaty," he said. "We're King's Rangers, and you're under arrest." Barton's spirits dropped to a new low as he realized that he'd run afoul of a pair of rangers. Suddenly, it all made sense. Rangers were definitely not people to tangle with. It was said, and Barton didn't disbelieve it, that they had magical powers. They could change their shape as they wished, appear or disappear at will, and shoot with uncanny accuracy. He groaned, then said in a grovelling tone,
"Let me go, Ranger Treaty, please. I'm just a poor honest man trying to make his way in the world."
Will Treaty let out a short bark of laughter. He straightened up, moving the sax knife away from Barton's throat. Barton made a move to rise, but a warning glance from the ranger stopped him. "I'll accept poor," he said, "but you're anything but honest. You and your friends have been robbing farmers on this road for the past month." He paused as the girl touched his arm. "What is it?" Speaking of his friends, wasn't there a fourth one? Will looked around. Donald had acted with more intelligence than his comrades. He was a good 150 meters away and disappearing from view over a rise in the ground. "There he goes," Will said. "I'm sure our friend here can tell us where we'll find him. In the meantime, we'll secure this lot." He looked down at Barton once more. "You, over on your belly, hands behind your back." His hand had dropped to the hilt of his sax once more, and Barton wasted no time in complying. The girl dropped to one knee beside him, and Barton felt two leather loops slip over his thumbs. Then they were pulled tight, and he was securely trussed. "Don't go anywhere," she told him, although, lying on his stomach with his hands fastened behind him, he would be unable to regain his feet in a hurry. The rangers strode to the other two bandits. Jem was sitting up, clutching his leg where the arrow had passed through the muscle of his calf, protruding on the other side. The wound was bleeding, but the presence of the arrow stemmed most of the flow. Jem was moaning in agony, rocking back and forth. "If you think it hurts now, wait till we take that arrow out," Will told him unsympathetically. The robber band hadn't just taken money from defenceless farmers over the past month. They'd also been responsible for half a dozen severe beatings, leaving their victims bruised and bleeding. Most of their victims had been elderly men. All of them had been outnumbered 4-1, and Will had no sympathy for the thugs who had carried out the beatings. He knelt behind Jem and roughly dragged his hands behind his back, securing them with another pair of thumb cuffs. Maddie did the same for Walt, who was still dazed and groggy and offered no resistance. "You used your sling on him?" Will asked. Maddie nodded. "I assumed you wanted him alive, and I didn't have a clear shot at his legs." Will sniffed disdainfully. "Admit it, you were just showing off." He stooped to peer more closely at Walt, raising the felt cap to study the bruise on the side of his head. "You threw a rock, did you?" Normally, Maddie used specially cast lead shot from her sling, but she also carried a supply of smooth river rocks. "I thought a lead shot might split his skull," she said. "A rock was safer." Will grinned. "I doubt he'd agree with you." Walt gazed owlishly at them, following the sound of their voices. His eyes were still unfocused and bleary. Will slipped his hands under the bandit's arms and hoisted him upright. "Come on, let's have you on your feet." Walt stood, swaying uncertainly. Will waited until he was sure the dazed man wasn't about to fall to the ground again, then heaved Jem to his feet as well. He studied Jem, looking critically at the arrow that had gone through his calf. It protruded some 30 centimetres from the inside of the muscle, which would make it almost impossible for Jem to walk. The shaft would strike against his other leg with every step. "That'll have to come out," he said. Jem whimpered in anticipation of the pain. "Can't you just leave me here while you fetch a healer?" he pleaded. "I swear I won't go anywhere." "I'm sure you won't," Will said cheerfully. "But we need to get that arrow out and clean and bandage the wound." "Do you have to break it?" Maddie asked. "That's a good shaft." Will shook his head at her lack of sympathy. "Spare a thought for our poor friend here," he said. "It'll be less painful if we break it off. Otherwise, I'd have to pull the whole thing through." With the barbed head on the arrow, there was no way they could remove it by pulling it back the way it had come. The easiest and quickest way was to break the shaft of the arrow close to the exit wound, then pull it back. Maddie gave Jem a disgruntled look. "Who cares about less painful?" she said. "That's a good shaft." Will made a tut-tutting noise and shook his head as he looked at Jem. "Young people can be so cruel," he said. Then he bent and quickly snapped off the shaft, pulling it back through the wound in the same motion. Jem blanched with the sudden pain, and his leg nearly gave way. Will steadied him, then whipped a bandage around the wound, which had begun to ooze blood when the arrow was removed. Will tightened the bandage and tied it off, then stood, watching Jem carefully. The bandit hobbled a pace or two. It was obviously painful for him to put weight on the leg. Will turned him around and removed the thumb cuffs. "Don't think we'll need these." He beckoned Barton to come closer. "You can help him walk," he told the bandit leader. Then, looking again at Jem, he said, "Put your arm around the bear killer's shoulders." Jem did as he was told, shuffling closer and placing his left arm around Barton's heavy-set shoulders. Will studied them for a few seconds, then nodded approval. "That'll do nicely," he said. "We've got a nice long walk ahead of us." "Where are you taking us?" Barton asked fearfully. He knew that, as an apprehended bandit, his next few years would not be pleasant. "Willow Bend Village," Will told him. This was the village where he had sold the farm's goods. "They've got a constable there and a nice warm jail. You'll love it." Barton's sour expression indicated that this was unlikely. Will continued. "On the way, you can tell us where to find that friend of yours who ran off." A crafty expression came over Barton's face. "If I do, will you ask the magistrate to give me a reduced sentence?" he wheedled. Will regarded him without any expression for several seconds. "No," he said at length. "But if you don't, I'll ask Maddie here to shoot you in the leg as well." Of course, there was no way he would ever carry out such a threat, but Barton wasn't to know it. It was the sort of thing that the burly robber would do himself, and he assumed other people were just as vindictive as he was.
"There's a game trail off the road about 2 kilometres away. It leads to our cabin," Barton told him. "That's where you'll find him."
5. They found Donald in the hut, as Barton had predicted. Showing a distinct lack of imagination, he was hiding under a bed. Unfortunately, the bed was several inches shorter than he was, and his feet protruded at one end. "Bandits just aren't what they used to be," Will said with mock regret, as they thumb-cuffed Donald and added him to their little cavalcade. "They used to be smarter then?" Maddie asked. He shrugged. "It seemed that way. They were certainly braver." They continued on to Willow Bend, riding comfortably, while the former bandits shuffled awkwardly ahead of them. Barton and Jem moved clumsily, trying to keep in step, and the other two, with their hands secured behind them, were constantly losing their balance on the uneven surface of the road.
"Couldn't we ride in the cart?" Jem pleaded, after they had gone a kilometre past the spot where they had caught up with Donald.
Will laughed without humour. "You could," he said, and Jem's face brightened. "But you're not going to," Will added, and the outlaw's face fell once more. They rode up the single main street of Willow Bend, watched by the curious villagers, and stopped outside the constable's watch house, which also housed the town jail. The constable, a burly man in his mid-50s, hurried out to greet them.
Rangers were important visitors, and Will had donned his ranger cloak, tossing the patched old farm smock into the tray of the cart.
"Rangers," the constable said respectfully, "please step down." It was good manners to wait to dismount until you were invited. Maddie and Will swung down easily now. "I'm Will Treaty. This is Ranger Maddie Regal," Will said. He saw the constable's eyes widen slightly at his name. Will Treaty was a larger-than-life figure in this part of the country. In most parts of the country, in fact. Will jerked his thumb at the 4 forlorn figures who had preceded them. "These are the men who've been preying on farm folk going to market," he said. "You can keep them in your jail until the magistrate makes his monthly rounds. Then they can serve their sentence at Castle Redmond." He handed across a rolled scroll. "This is my deposition. You can give it to the magistrate. Until he hears their case, you can use them for any unpleasant tasks you might have in the village." The constable took the scroll and tucked it into his belt. He rubbed his hands together expectantly. There were always plenty of dirty, unpleasant labouring tasks to be carried out in the village. Privies had to be dug, cesspools to be drained and cleaned. Barton and his gang wouldn't be left sitting idle while they waited for their trial.
"How did you come upon them?" he asked.
For obvious reasons, Will's plan of posing as a farmer going to the market had not been widely known. "I took Malcolm Tillerman's place," Will told him, "and took his products to market. These sad specimens tried to rob me on the way back. Malcolm's money is in the cart there. You can pass it on to him with my thanks. I hope I got a good price for his goods." The constable grinned.
"Not as good as he would have," he said.
Malcolm was known in the district as a man who drove a hard bargain. He turned back to the watch house behind him.
"Barney! Joseph!" he called. "Out here, please."
2 heavy-set men emerged from the watch house. Members of the watch were usually on the large side. They were dressed in the simple uniform of the town watch. A leather jerkin over wool trousers and knee-high boots, with a heavy leather belt carrying their keys and their truncheons, the twin symbols of their office. "Get these four inside," the constable told them, and they shepherded the bandits into the building. "If you have a local healer, you might get him to look at that leg wound on the blonde one," Will said. "I've bandaged it, but it'll need cleaning to stop it getting infected." "We've an apothecary in the village," the constable told him. "I'll send for him." Will nodded. "Do that. And for now, we'll bid you good day and be on our way." The watch house had a small yard at the rear. They unharnessed the mule from the cart and left both in the yard, carrying the leather money sacks into the constable's quarters for safekeeping. Then, making their farewells, they mounted Bumper and Tug and rode off, heading for the highway that led to Castle Redmond. "Why do you call me Maddy Regal?" Maddy asked, after they'd been riding for some time. Will turned in the saddle to look at her. "I have to call you something," he said. "Just Maddy doesn't seem to be enough, somehow." They rode on for several hundred metres before she spoke again. "You could call me Maddy Altman," she suggested. "That's Dad's name, after all. So it's really my name, too." "I could," Will replied. There was a note of doubt in his voice. "But Horace's name is relatively well known and recognised. He's quite a famous figure, after all. People might put two and two together and figure out that you're his daughter." "So?" Maddy asked. "So then they would realise that if you're his daughter, you're also Cassandra's daughter, and the second in line to the throne. And you know that we prefer to keep that fact secret." It had been agreed several years before that if Maddy were to serve as a ranger's apprentice, and eventually as a ranger, her relationship to the royal family must be concealed. Rangers needed to maintain a high level of anonymity. In addition, the knowledge that she was second in line to the throne might endanger her life. She could be targeted by enemies seeking to put pressure on the king. It would certainly draw attention to her and make it difficult for her to maintain the secrecy that was so much a part of a ranger's life. "So, why Regal?" she asked. She pronounced it the way Will had, in the Gaelic fashion, so that it sounded like Regal rather than Regale. "Initially, I thought of calling you Maddy Royal," Will said, "being as you're a princess and such. But I realised that would be almost as bad as calling you Altman. People would soon twig that you actually were royal. Then they'd realise you're a princess, and we'd be back where we started." "So, where did Regal come from?" "It's similar to royal. It means much the same thing. But it's not as obvious, particularly when we pronounce it in the Gaelic fashion. Most people won't make the link." He paused. "Don't you like being Regal?" he said eventually. She shook her head. "Maddy Regal," she said derisively. "It sounds like madrigal if you say it quickly." "A fine dance, the madrigal," Will told her, grinning. She sniffed. "A fine dance, maybe, but a dumb name. I don't like it." "I think it suits you," Will said, teasing her. "It's melodic and happy, just like you." "Well, I wish you'd think of another name for me," she said. He shrugged. "Wish away," he said. "You should be grateful I thought of that one." "I'm not good at names. It takes me ages to think of a name when I get a new dog." "Thanks for comparing me to Sable," Maddy said. Sable was Will's current border collie, a descendant of Shadow, his first dog. "Think nothing of it. I'm very fond of Sable," he told her. "Maybe I should just revert to plain old Maddy," she said, "and skip having a second name." But before she finished, Will was shaking his head, all traces of humour gone from his expression. You need a second name, he said seriously. Everyone does. If you don't have a second name, you feel somehow detached and rootless. You feel incomplete. I should know, he added. I spent half my life without a second name, just known as Will, the orphan boy. She was somewhat surprised by the intensity of his feelings. Was it really that bad? She asked. He shrugged, a little embarrassed that he had exposed that aspect of his life. I guess I was happy enough, he said. But all the others in the ward, Horace, Alice, Jenny and George, they all had family names. They might have lost their parents, but they knew who they had been. They knew where they came from. I didn't, and I guess I felt, I don't know, left out somehow. She regarded him with interest. She was surprised to hear that he had ever felt so insecure. Will was such a capable person, sure of himself, and full of confidence. It was difficult to think of him feeling inferior. I guess I'll stay as Maddie Madrigal, then, she said. He smiled. You could do worse. When the shadows lengthened, they were still 3 or 4 hours away from Redmond and their cabin among the trees. They were in no rush, so they made camp in a sheltered glade a little way from the highway. Maddie enjoyed camping out with Will. He was an excellent camp cook, and he always served up a delicious dinner. Somehow, the fact that they were eating it in the open air, with the scent of wood smoke from their fire wafting around them, made it taste even better, as did the strong, sweet coffee they drank afterward. It was a fine night, so they didn't bother with their tents. They spread out their bedrolls and wrapped themselves in their cloaks to sleep. Maddie lay on her back, gazing up at the stars as they wheeled slowly overhead, and sighed contentedly. I love this life, she said quietly. I don't think I could ever go back to living in the palace and being a princess. You may need to take over as queen one day, Will told her. She shook her head. Someone else can do that. I'm a ranger. I love being a ranger. That's what makes you a good one, Will said, and she turned in surprise to look at him. He rarely uttered such words of praise. She waited for him to say more, but his deep, even breathing told her he was already asleep, or was pretending to be. 6. Will and Maddie rode slowly up the high street of the little village below Castle Redmond, nodding to the villagers who called greetings to them as they passed by. Will was a popular figure in the village. He had grown up in Redmond, first in the ward that Baron Arold maintained for orphaned children, then as an apprentice to Holt, one of the most famous of the rangers. In more recent years, Will's fame had gone on to equal or even surpass that of his mentor, and the local people were proud that two such renowned figures lived in their fief. It set Redmond above the neighbouring fiefs, and the folk who lived there enjoyed sharing the reflected glory of the two illustrious rangers. And now Maddie, who had been in the fief for the past 4 years, was adding her own achievements to those of the other two. Less than a year ago, she had foiled a plot to seize the throne of Araluin, and before that, she had assisted Will in unmasking and destroying a gang of kidnappers who had been carrying out their vile work on the east coast of the kingdom. All in all, there were plenty of reasons why the villagers might feel proud of their rangers, and glad to greet them as they passed by. They rode past Jenny's restaurant. Jenny herself was sitting in the sun outside her establishment, drinking coffee and keeping an eye on her staff as they prepared the tables for the evening's trading. She raised her cup to them as they passed, accompanying the gesture with a broad smile. She and Will had grown up together in the ward, and Jenny had helped him settle Maddie in when she had first arrived, a spoiled and self-centred princess who was badly in need of discipline. Will waved to his old friend and glanced quizzically from her to the young girl riding beside him. How things had changed, he thought. These days, he would trust Maddie with his life. In fact, he had just done so when they had confronted Barton Bearkiller and his gang. Maddie sensed he was watching her and tilted her head in a question. What? She asked. But Will didn't answer directly. She'd had enough praise lately, he thought, and he was never one to overdo that sort of thing. I thought we might eat at Jenny's tonight, he said instead. Maddie nodded enthusiastically. Sounds good to me, she said. Should I ride over and ask her to keep a table for us? Will shook his head. She'll always fit me in, he said. That's one of the advantages of being an old ward mate. At the top of the hill, they left the village and turned right into the narrow trail between the trees that led to their cabin. As they came closer, both horses began twitching their ears and sniffing the air. They're glad to be home, Maddie observed. But Will disagreed. There's someone at the cabin, he said. They can scent whoever it is. They emerged from the trees into the clearing around the cabin, and Maddie saw that he was right. There was a small, shaggy horse standing by the tethering rail outside the cabin, and a grey and green cloaked figure was sitting on the veranda, legs stretched out, enjoying the sunshine. Their horses whinnied a greeting to the tethered horse, and it responded. It's Halt, Maddie said, recognising his horse initially. Their visitor's face wasn't so easy to make out, as the shadow from the veranda roof fell over him, reaching down to shoulder level. What's he doing here? Will said to himself. They rode up to the cabin, and Halt rose to greet them as they came near.
Good morning,
he said cheerfully, although he was only just correct. Midday was only a few minutes away. He shook hands with Will as the younger man dismounted, then enveloped Maddie in a bear hug. Halt was very fond of his former apprentice's apprentice. He had been instrumental in having Maddie selected for training as a ranger, the first female ranger in the history of the Corps. Seeing how well she had turned out, he felt his choice had been more than justified. What brings you here? Will asked, when Halt had disengaged himself from the hug. Halt jerked his thumb at a black-and-white form sprawled on the end of the veranda in the sun, lying on her back with her rear legs splayed out and her forepaws folded back on themselves.
I thought you'd be home today, so I brought Sable down from the castle, he said, while Maddie and Will had been hunting the market gang, as they had been known.
Halt and Lady Pauline had taken care of Will's dog. At the mention of her name, Sable's tail thumped on the boards of the veranda several times. Otherwise, she made no movement at all. Will raised one eyebrow. I could be overwhelmed by such a welcome, he said. Obviously she hasn't missed us. I assume you've been spoiling her, as usual? Halt grinned.
Not me. Pauline.
His wife was fond of dogs in general, and Sable in particular. Sable, sensing this, as dogs will, made a huge fuss of Lady Pauline whenever she saw her. As a result, Pauline was constantly giving her treats and patting her, rubbing her ears and her belly. When Sable stayed with Halt and Pauline, she became accustomed to this sort of treatment far too quickly. It usually took several days for Will to retrain her in what he considered to be proper dog behaviour.
The stove's lit and the coffee's on, Halt told him, and Will nodded his appreciation.
Maddie stepped forward and took Tug's bridle in one hand, bumpers in the other. "I'll get the horses settled," she said. Will unfastened his travel pack and bedroll from behind Tug's saddle and slung them over his shoulder. "Thanks," he said. "We'll pour you a coffee while you're doing that." He and Hort went inside, while Maddie led the two horses to the stable at the rear of the cabin. They were nursing mugs of coffee, with another full mug waiting for Maddie, when she rejoined them. She added a heaped spoonful of honey to the steaming liquid and stirred it. Will gave her a pained look. "I already did that," she shrugged. "You never put enough in," she said, and tasted her drink. "Perfect." Will shook his head. "Maybe that's because I have to pay for the honey," he muttered. Then he turned to Hort. "So, what's behind this visit, other than the need to bring Sable back?" While they'd been waiting for Maddie, they hadn't discussed the reason Hort had been waiting for them. Instead, they had talked about inconsequential matters, with Will describing their encounter with the self-styled bear killer and his thugs.
"A carrier pigeon arrived from Gillen yesterday evening," Hort said. "The king has summoned us to Castle Araluen."
"Is it urgent?" Maddie asked. The two older rangers exchanged a glance. "A summons from the king is always urgent," Will told her. "Should we get going straight away?" he asked Hort. Hort made a demurring gesture.
"There's no need to rush," he said.
"After all, nobody will know when you actually arrived back, or when you received the message. We can get going in the morning. Get a good night's sleep tonight, and we'll leave after sunup."
Will nodded. "That sounds fair enough. Did Gillen give you any idea what this is all about?"
"Just said, come at once. I imagine it's important."
"What makes you think so?" Maddie asked. Hort shrugged.
"The tone of the message, for starters. And pigeon messages can go astray all too easily," he said. "If it's a delicate matter, it's never a good idea to put in too much detail, just in case the message falls into unfriendly hands."
"Is that likely?" Maddie asked, the doubt in her voice obvious.
"Unscrupulous people in the past have been known to train falcons to capture or kill message pigeons," Hort told her. "Confidential information can be quite valuable if the wrong person gets hold of it."
"Maybe it's a mistake to use pigeons for messages," Will said. "They're altogether too peaceful. They can't defend themselves."
"Some years back, we tried training ravens to carry messages.
It'd take a brave falcon to attack a raven," Hort said, "but it didn't work out."
"Why not?" Maddie asked, and the white-haired ranger hid a grin.
"Ravens talk too much," he said.
"They can't keep a secret, no matter how hard they try."
Maddie rolled her eyes, as only a teenage girl can do. "There are times when you're very amusing, Hort," she said. "This isn't one of them." Hort finished his coffee and stood up.
"Young people have no sense of humour," he said, with some dignity.
He pulled up the cowl on his cloak and turned to the door.
"I'll see you at sunup," he said. "Pauline will come down later to collect Sable."
They made their farewells and he mounted Abelard, wheeling the ranger horse toward the narrow path through the trees. Will and Maddie watched as he rode away, finally disappearing round the first bend. Will rubbed his beard thoughtfully. "That's unusual," he said, more to himself than to Maddie. She cocked her head curiously toward him.
"How do you mean?"
"Well," he said, turning to go back into the little cabin. "Hort's semi-retired these days, and he's never gone on a mission with us. I wonder why Duncan has summoned all three of us to the castle." Maddie considered the point and found she had no answer. "I expect we'll find out when we get there," she said. "I expect so." 7. "But why Maddie?" said Cassandra. "Why should she be involved in this?"
Horace sighed. "Cassandra, we've discussed this before."
His wife interrupted before he could go any further, ignoring him and speaking to her father. "I can understand why you'd send Will. After all, he's the best ranger you have. But why should Maddie go as well?"
"She's a ranger," her father said patiently.
He knew what was on her mind, and he knew they were in for an argument. "She's your granddaughter," Cassandra replied, "and she's second in line to the throne. Yet you're willing to place her in danger."
"The world is a dangerous place," Duncan told her, "even for princesses. Maddie has chosen to join the Rangers and live their life. I can't make exceptions for her."
"But it will be dangerous," Cassandra protested.
"Just as it was dangerous for you to ransom Arrak from the Tuolaji tribesmen. Just as it was dangerous for you to travel to Nihonjar to find Horace."
"That was different," Cassandra protested. "I was..."
"You were the heir to the throne. You accepted that there was a responsibility that went along with the privilege. That's the way we have to live our lives, Cassandra."
"I just don't see why it's necessary for her to go. Let Will do it. He can handle it on his own."
"He'll be a lot better off if Maddie's with him," Gillen said quietly.
He had been expecting Cassandra to object to the idea of Maddie accompanying Will on the secret mission to Gallica. He knew how Cassandra felt about her daughter's role as an apprentice ranger. She had opposed it from the start and had never fully accepted it. Cassandra turned to face him. "How do you figure that?" she challenged. "A stranger travelling alone is more likely to excite suspicion than a father and daughter travelling together. That's how they'll be seen. A man travelling with his daughter will be seen as relatively harmless. After all, what father would willingly expose his daughter to danger?"
"So you admit she will be in danger?" Cassandra said.
Gillen nodded. "Of course I admit it. She's a ranger, after all, and that's part and parcel of a ranger's life."
Cassandra opened her mouth to object, but Horace forestalled her.
"We agreed to this when she decided to join the Corps," he said. "If she's a ranger, she has to take her share of dangerous situations. We can't pick and choose what she does. We can't insist that she only goes on safe missions."
"Not that there are too many of them," Gillen observed.
But Cassandra wasn't willing to give in just yet. "You agreed to this. I never wanted her to be a ranger in the first place."
"And yet she is one," her father said firmly. "And as a ranger, she has to undertake her share of hazardous duties. Otherwise, she might as well quit the Corps."
"That'd be fine by me," Cassandra said bitterly.
"So, you'd rather have her sit meekly around the castle, practicing her needlework and learning court etiquette?" her father said. "That's pretty poor training for a future queen. It was something you never accepted. You knew you had to be out in the real world, learning how to lead men and defend your country in times of war."
In her heart, Cassandra knew they were right. As a young woman, she had led an exciting and often dangerous life. She had travelled the world, fought in battles, and faced the kingdom's enemies countless times. The idea of remaining safely at home in Castle Araluen had been anathema to her, and she knew she couldn't impose such a restriction on her daughter. If Maddie was to be queen one day, she had to experience the real world, with all its hazards. That way,
She would be equipped to rule the country wisely and bravely. Cassandra knew all this, but that didn't mean she had to like it. She scowled at the three men sitting opposite her. "I hate it when you all gang up on me," she said. Her father smiled fondly at her.
"Now you know how I used to feel," he told her.
"It's not easy to send your only daughter off into the world, but it's something we all have to do. And Maddie's experiences as a ranger will make her a better queen when the time comes." He looked away from her as there was a discreet knock at the door to his office.
"What is it?" he called.
The door opened to admit one of his servants. "My lord, there are three rangers here to see you," he said. Duncan made a beckoning gesture.
"Thank you, Miles. Please tell them to come in."
The servant opened the door wider and stood to one side to admit the three grey and green cloaked figures. Holt, Will and Maddie strode into the room, Maddie staying slightly behind her superiors. They stopped before Duncan's big desk while the servant withdrew, closing the door behind him. Holt, as the most senior of the group, spoke.
"You sent for us, my lord."
Duncan rose from his seat to greet them, wincing slightly as he placed weight on his injured leg.
"Holt, how good it is to see you. And you, Will, of course."
He reserved a special smile of welcome for his granddaughter. He felt a sudden surge of pride seeing her in her ranger uniform. Even though she was still an apprentice, she had already proven her skill and courage several times over.
"Maddie," he said, "I trust you've been behaving yourself."
She smiled widely in return. "Not too much, Grandfather," she said. Then Horace and Gillen stepped forward to greet the newcomers, and the room was full of warmth and welcome. Cassandra held back for a few seconds, then impulsively rushed forward and enveloped Maddie in a hug, too full of emotion to speak, her eyes bright with tears. Maddie, a little overwhelmed by the effusive greeting, was somewhat taken aback. "Mum," she exclaimed, "settle down." She met her father's eyes over Cassandra's shoulder and raised her eyebrows in a question. He made a gesture with his hands, which she took to mean, "Your mother's a little emotional. Go with it." She nodded and allowed her mother a few seconds to compose herself. Cassandra finally brought her emotions under control and released Maddie to Horace's embrace. Will stepped forward then and hugged Cassandra. He thought he understood the reason for her display of emotion. Obviously, he and Maddie were being sent on a mission. Equally obviously, Cassandra was upset by the fact. There was nothing new in that, he thought. His old friend was extremely protective when it came to her daughter. "I'll look after her," he said softly. For a moment or two, she buried her face in his shoulder. Then she recovered and stepped back, smiling into his eyes. The greetings went on for several more minutes. Then Duncan called the group to order. They pulled chairs around the table and waited expectantly for him to tell them why they were here. He wasted no time getting to the heart of the matter.
"Will, I want you and Maddie to go to Gallica," he said.
Maddie and Will exchanged a quick glance. One thing about life as a ranger, Maddie thought, you never knew what was coming next. Will scratched his beard. "Gallica," he said, "what's going on there that concerns us?" Will leaned back, nodding, as Duncan finished explaining the reason he had summoned them to Araluen.
"Makes sense," he said. "A father and daughter travelling together don't attract as much attention. People don't seem to be as suspicious as they might be if I were on my own."
"That's what I thought," Gillen said. "After all, it worked before when you were hunting those child robbers on the East Coast."
"But why do we care if there's trouble in Gallica?" Maddie asked. After all, it's not as if Philippe has ever done us any favours. She realised that she might have sounded somewhat heartless and hurried to amend her statement. I mean, I'm sorry that his son has been kidnapped, but it hardly involves us, does it?
Perhaps not, Horace told her. But it's probably better for us if Philippe remains on the throne. This Lassigny type could be a problem for us if he managed to replace Philippe. And there's not much doubt that's his eventual intention. The more power he gains, the greater a potential threat he is to us.
Maddie nodded as she saw the reasoning behind her father's words. Holt was frowning slightly.
My lord, he said to Duncan, I take it you don't want me to go with Will and Maddie. Why did you want me here?
Duncan hesitated a second, then replied,
I always value your input, Holt. We have to work out how these two will be disguised. After all, they'll have to have some plausible reason for wandering around the Gallican countryside.
Holt nodded slowly. He suspected there was something Duncan wasn't telling him. Whatever it might be, he was sure he'd find out in due course. So he was willing to wait until the king was ready to say more.
8. The meeting broke up shortly afterward. The three new arrivals were given time to freshen up and eat after their long journey. Then Gillen, Holt, Will, Horace and Cassandra assembled in Gillen's office to make plans for Will and Maddie's journey to Gallica. Maddie wasn't required for that meeting, so she went in search of Ingrid, her former maid and companion, who was now a senior member of Cassandra's staff. Duncan had other matters to attend to. The king was always busy, and he trusted his senior officers to come up with a workable plan. He didn't need to be concerned with the details. The ability to delegate was one of the hallmarks of a good leader, and it had been a feature of Duncan's reign. He chose reliable people as his subordinates, and left them to get on with it. Why buy a dog and wag your own tail? He had been known to say. Shouldn't that be, why buy a dog and bark yourself? Cassandra had once asked him when she was a young girl. He had shrugged.
Bark, wag your tail, dogs do both. Why do either if you've got one?
So, are we getting a dog? She had asked eagerly, but he shook his head.
No, I'll have to do my own tail wagging for a while, he said. Besides, if you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas.
That night, Cassandra had gone to bed, a confused little girl. The five friends sat in Gillen's tower office, a big pot of coffee on the table between them. Once cups had been poured and generous quantities of honey spooned in, they sat back and discussed the best method for Will and Maddie to travel unobtrusively in Gallica.
You'll hardly blend in, Horace observed. You're foreigners. People will notice you.
I speak Gallican, Will said. Holt raised an eyebrow at him. He was fluent in the language himself and had taught Will, so he knew his former apprentice's shortcomings.
With an appalling Araluan accent, he pointed out. Say good morning and they'll pick you for a foreigner straight away, before you even get to morning.
Will shrugged. He knew Holt was right. He'd never managed to get his tongue around the Gallican accent. Well, we can't simply ride around Gallica for no reason, he said. We'll be bound to attract attention that way.
Best way to avoid attention is to divert it. Attract it to something else, Gillen observed.
There was silence for some 10 seconds, while they all thought about this. You need some sort of reason for travelling, Cassandra said finally. Something that distracts people from the fact that you're not locals.
You could pretend to be tinkers,
Horace suggested. They all turned pained gazes upon him. Seeing their expressions, he spread his hands in a question. What?
Why does someone always suggest that? Gillen said.
Tinkers have a reputation as petty thieves, and that means people watch them closely. They don't blend in.
Horace frowned.
But in romance stories and sagas, heroes often disguise themselves as tinkers, he protested.
They often fight dragons and fly on magic horses too, Will told him.
And Horace subsided, realizing that what his friend said was true.
I'm sure not all tinkers are dishonest, Cassandra put in.
It's probably just a few bad ones that have given the others a bad reputation.
So we could have a sign that says, "We're honest tinkers," Will asked. That should do the trick.
Cassandra scowled at him and he grinned.
Whether tinkers are dishonest or not, Holt said, they have that reputation, and people tend to be suspicious of them.
Besides, Will continued, what if someone actually believed us and trusted us and asked me to mend a pot with a hole in it? I'd be totally out of my depth.
That's true, Holt said. You're no handyman, are you?
He rubbed his beard thoughtfully.
When you went to Mackendaw years ago, you posed as a jungler. Maybe that would work again.
Will considered the idea and nodded slowly. He actually had quite a talent for playing the mandola, and he had a pleasant singing voice.
That might work, he said.
I think I can remember the tricks of the trade that Berrigan taught me. Berrigan was a former ranger who had been forced to retire from the corps when he lost a leg. He had found a new identity and purpose for himself as a jongler, a travelling musician, and had carried out several intelligence operations for the corps in the past.
"Do you still play your lute?" Holt asked.
Will turned an exasperated expression on him. "It's a mand," he began. Then, seeing that Holt was trying, unsuccessfully, to smother a grin, he simply agreed.
"Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I've got it with me," he said.
For years, Holt had been trying to get a rise out of him by pretending he didn't know the difference between a lute and a mandola. Usually, he succeeded.
But now Will frowned as a thought struck him.
"But what about Maddie?" he asked.
Gillen shrugged his shoulders.
"Couldn't she accompany you? I mean, sing along with you."
"Can she sing?" Holt asked.
He didn't notice that both Cassandra and Horace looked away, avoiding eye contact with him. Will hesitated. He liked his young apprentice, and hated to say anything derogatory about her.
"Like a bird," he said finally.
Holt spread his hands in a satisfied gesture.
"Well, there you are."
But Will continued. "The bird I had in mind was a crow," he said uncomfortably. Horace and Cassandra both nodded. Gillen was unconvinced.
"Oh, come on. She can't be that bad," he said.
But Maddie's parents turned to him. "She is that bad," Cassandra finally said. Gillen eyed her suspiciously, suspecting that she might be using this as a pretext for excluding Maddie from the mission. Seeing that he was unconvinced, Will decided the best way would be to let Gillen see for himself.
"If you sent for Maddie, and have someone fetch my mandola, I'll show you," he said.
Gillen dispatched his assistant, Nickel, a second-year apprentice, to fetch the instrument and Maddie.
Nickel arrived back with the instrument 5 minutes later. Maddie was a few minutes behind him.
Will was tuning the 8 strings of the mandola when Maddie arrived, curiosity written all over her face.
She assumed that the group had come up with an idea as to how she and her mentor would travel through Gallica. She looked at the mandola in Will's hands with obvious interest. "There's a suggestion that we might travel as jonglers," he said, "with me playing and both of us singing." Maddie nodded enthusiastically. "Sounds good to me." Will looked down at the instrument to avoid her enthusiastic gaze. Like so many tone-deaf people, Maddie had no idea that her singing was totally off-key. "Remember the whistling miller?" he said, and she nodded. He struck a chord. "Come in on the chorus." He played a clever little introduction, then began singing. The whistling miller of Whittington Green had the loudest whistle you've ever seen. He got no further. Halt held his hands up in protest.
"Whoa, whoa! Back up the hay cart there," Halt said.
Will looked at him, puzzled. "Problem?" Halt nodded explicitly.
"Yes, problem. How can you see a whistle? I take it it's not an actual instrument. It's the noise this miller person makes."
"That's right," Will agreed.
"Then he should have had the loudest whistle you'd ever heard."
"It doesn't rhyme that way."
"Well, it doesn't make sense your way," Holt said, with some heat. "It's ridiculous."
"It's a song, Holt. It's poetic license."
"People always say that when they're being dumb. This is a dumb song."
"I could always do Greybeard Halt," Will suggested. For a long moment, they locked gazes. Halt hated that song. He finally made a gesture of defeat.
"All right, go ahead with this visible whistler," he said.
Will continued from the spot where he'd stopped. He'd whistle all night and he'd whistle all day, and if anyone asked him, he would say... Halt held up a hand once more and Will stopped, a little annoyed. No singer likes to be constantly interrupted, and he suspected Halt was doing it on purpose. "What now?" he said tersely.
"If anyone asked him what?" Halt asked.
Will scowled at him.
"We're about to get to that," he told his old mentor. "If you'd stop interrupting, you'd know what they asked."